The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 695 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show, where, of course, every week we get down to the most important questions like, can a horror movie be set in space? Of course, we're going to be talking about that and so much more than my panel.
Not.
Can't yes, wait
but
to
don't,
just...
Come on.
This was too much. It was too much yesterday. I couldn't stand it. You know what was worse? People were explaining why a horror movie can be set in space, and I'm like, I know that. I was saying that it was a bad take. Anyway, continue.
Of course, this is the show where we talk about the Twitter discourse. If you're not on Twitter, congrats to you. You're living probably a healthier life than we are. Speaking of we,
in addition
to me on the show, I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Thank you.
And Lucy O'Brien.
I'm back, baby.
Lucy's back, everyone. Thank you. Thank you all for joining us.
And yes, Lucy, missed you.
We're happy to have you back.
You guys
thank you.
Too.
Thank you for taking the time this week as you're getting back into the swing of things. Really appreciate it. And also, I know that because of timing, we weren't able to, but also happy belated birthday to you, Brian.
Oh, thanks. I was about to clap. I thought it was somebody else. I'm old now, so it doesn't matter anymore. But
moved my desk. So, you know, we've all got stuff going on.
Wow.
Set up.
Yeah.
Big month for us all.
Yeah. It's Chekhov's TNT crate, as it's known. Of course, beyond all of our inane ramblings of whatever's been going on Twitter, we do have a lot in the world of PlayStation to discuss. Of course, some of the biggest PlayStation releases are a little further ahead in this year. We'll be talking about things like Returnal and Deathloop and more when they come out. But there's actually a decent amount of games coming out now, like the PlayStation Plus lineup that has a brand new game in it, as well as some other stuff that we've been playing that we'll get to. But I did want to talk, of course, about some news that's been going on. And the first thing that I wanted to bring up is MLB The Show, which I think it is fair to say is not a PlayStation exclusive. We normally talk about too much in depth on the show. I think it's fair to say we are not the most baseball fanatics on staff. If you are looking for hardcore baseball fans, Podcast Unlocked, where they can now talk about MLB The Show, in fact, talked about it a lot this week. But I did want to bring it up on the show because we're in an interesting case where this is, of course, a Sony first-party developed game that has been announced to be on Xbox this year as well. And then we got the further announcement that it's going to be available day one on Game Pass on Xbox. But as of right now, it is not available, or it won't be made available day one on PlayStation Plus, as far as we know. That, of course, could change given our track record. We're actually recording the show later than we do previously. Probably Sony will announce it in between when we record in post. But This news came out end of last week, and then we learned, unsurprisingly, that this is a decision by the MLB, not PlayStation, to bring MLB The Show 21 to Game Pass and Xbox, of course. The game is actually being published by the MLB on Xbox, and so I think that allows for some of this wiggle room. Brian, I know you and McCaffrey did a conversation last week, and obviously there's a lot of talk about it on Unlocked, but I did think it was worth bringing up from the PlayStation side of, I am not surprised PlayStation didn't make any of these decisions, but it does put them in a really strange place, I think it's fair to say. Brian, I sort of want to get your take on, especially someone who uses Game Pass and, you know, Plus, and you've dipped into now even as well, your read on this situation, because it's a bit of a strange one.
Well, Well, I mean, first of all, no disrespect to Ryan McCaffrey, but I think when baseball fans at IGN want to hear from the experts, they come here to Podcast mm-hmm. Beyond. This is the place, really. I mean, Lucy, deep history of playing baseball, you know, where you grew up.
Baseball, New Zealand's favorite sport.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest sports in New Zealand.
Mike Piazza, mm-hmm. he's just world renowned.
Yep. Yeah, I saw him at a Tower Records once in the 90s, and he was there with like this beautiful woman, and my brother was like a huge fan of the Mets at the time, and my brother was just like, he was like, "You have a big game tomorrow. Stop screwing around." It's very stupid. That's like one of my only baseball stories. So this is an interesting one because I think it's like this is a big franchise. I don't think it's like, you know, it's not like Madden Call of Duty levels, but this is a big decision and a big move. And I think it's cool to see the love getting shared around a little bit here. I think what, and I said this in our combo with McCaffrey the other day, I think that like what makes this one specifically interesting is that it is, you're now seeing this massive divide between Microsoft saying we're adding a game to our service at no additional cost. I don't want to say free. I hate when people say Game Pass or PS Plus is free.
Yeah,
pet peeve of mine. Totally, it's not free.
And I'm sure we've said it on the show, but I totally agree with you.
I you could probably find a clip of me doing it, you know, and I'll go back in time and beat up myself if you want. versus Sony going, hey, $70 is the MSRP for brand new games coming to our platform. Like, and to the point where it's like, if a game is $50, it's seen as a budget price game. Whereas, you know, obviously that wasn't the case a long time ago. Now, game prices probably needed to budge at some point. They've been the same forever. On the flip side, Microsoft obviously doesn't feel that way. And whatever magic and sorcery they're doing behind the scenes to sustain the cost of all this stuff like that and somehow satiate developers and keep them happy and, you know, paid, Sony is taking a slightly different approach. And I think asking audiences to pay $70 for games while your competitor is giving them to you for free, air quotes, with no additional cost. See, I did it. I think that's when the conversation gets like really tricky. And I think that this won't be a make it or break it scenario for a lot of people who are on the fence on which console to get. But if this becomes a pattern, start to see stuff like this more and more often, I do think you're going to see some heads turn a little bit. You know, I don't know if it'll define the console wars. I still think PS5 will outsell Series X this generation, but I do think there's something here, and I think it's a big move.
Yeah, and we of course at the beginning of the month we saw Outriders launch day and date on Xbox Game Pass, but is full price on PlayStation if you want to buy it there. And of course the interesting wrinkle is that this is a Sony developed game that will be available, as you said, at no additional cost on a competitor's platform, which I think will only mean great things for more people being able to play this. You know, like, it is a brand new game for the Xbox audience. It's good to get it out there to them. It'll probably lead to more support for it, like, especially if they have microtransactions and whatnot in there. It probably only helps people more be inclined to buy that stuff. And so I think, like, at the end of the day, more people getting to play Sony San Diego Studios game is good for them because it's going to mean more investment in that game and that pipeline. But yeah, it does just bring up this very funny, like, Sony's own game costs you $70 more if you are subscribed to both things on both systems, if you're on the PlayStation system versus Xbox. Mm-hmm. And Lucy, on your end, I was just curious, like, I do think this is going to be an exception. I don't think we're going to be seeing more PlayStation games coming to Game Pass probably anytime soon. This is obviously the MLB of it all, but I'm just curious of your perspective of, like, for me, it feels like Xbox is really, really trying to forward think of, like, streaming or not streaming, excuse me, but like subscription services will be the future.
It definitely feels like this generation that, and, you know, I think we've said this kind of from the jump, that this generation feels very much like they're playing two different ball games. That's a baseball reference.
Classic baseball.
It was a home run.
You know, PlayStation kind of put forward sort of a revolutionary hardware again, it's not fully realized yet. We haven't really sort of felt that that sort of revolution happen. But it's, you know, that's where the promise lies in the PlayStation 5. And of course, like a standout stable of first party games. Whereas Xbox and Microsoft is very much, you know, value proposition and pure grunt under the hood, right? So they're two very different tacks. I don't think we've really seen this before. I mean, Microsoft has always tried to push the envelope. Well, certainly tried to push the envelope last generation with the Xbox One, but then obviously had to pivot because no one liked it. And this time around, I really think they're kind of coming up tops, at least in terms of bang for your buck, and sort of being a more well-rounded machine, more well-rounded service. You know, I still think that Sony is carving out its own path. I still think we're going to see some of the better games, the best. You know, I have so much faith in Sony's stable of first-party studios. But it's kind of hard. It's hard to sort of say at this stage, well, yeah, you can buy it for $70 on PlayStation, or you can get it at no additional cost on Xbox. Like you're talking about, this is $70 is a lot of money, and it's what Microsoft is doing is really, really impressive. You know, I sort of feel like PlayStation, while they are carving out their own sort of path, I think there needs to be some kind of acknowledgement or address or like something to kind of counter this, because Microsoft is laying down, I mean, especially with the Bethesda acquisition, like we're seeing Microsoft make some really like ballsy moves this generation. And I think Sony needs to start thinking outside of just, hey, we've got a more interesting machine, and when we've got these great first party games, because like, I, you know, if you're going to be very competitive in the space where people are buying third party titles and deciding which console to play them on, there's got to be more. If you've got $70 and $0, there's got to be something more attractive there. So, you know, I know that's like a basically long winded way to say it's two different business sort of angles, but I do think Xbox is making a really good argument right now for the X and the S.
Right. Which I think is what's really cool about all that is that and we always say this, like as consumers we win. If you look at like the last week or so, we've gotten you know, Outriders came to Game Pass day one. Oddworld came to PlayStation Plus day one. The Avengers is coming to PS Now, the PS4 version. Like these are big games, you know. Like maybe you're over the Avengers, maybe you don't really care about Oddworld, but these are games that would have cost $60-$70 that are now just being added at no additional cost to pre-existing subscription services. If you look at the way these consoles launched, it's completely different than they launched, you know, against each other years ago, because right off the bat, Microsoft shot themselves in the foot and never caught up. This time around, Microsoft had a just flat out abysmal launch in terms of like exclusive first party stuff, or really anything that was that defined what that system was supposed to be or what it could do. I felt that the messaging was backwards, and you know, play it anywhere, play on your PC. We don't care. Like, I was like, do you want me to buy your machine or not? Like, what do you want me to do? Whereas PlayStation was like, okay, we've got these beefed up versions of current gen games. And we've got a couple of exclusives here and there. And we've got, you know, Astro, and he rumbles when you run, and quietly my favorite launch game. But once we got that week or two or the month or two or a couple of months out of the way, the things kind of settled and tapered off a little bit. And now we're in this kind of like little, every single day is like a little war. And I love it. Like it's really, really nice.
Yeah.
Like it feels like every few days, one or the other makes a small little announcement. And these are the things that define a generation and sustain what people are playing between the big tentpole games and the big first party AAA exclusives and stuff like that, which admittedly we're getting Returnal this month. But outside of that, we really haven't had a ton of first party exclusive stuff on PS5 since launch. And so, you know, I feel like in the interim, Microsoft is coming in every day and going, hey, we got this. Hey, we got this. Hey, we got this. Like they're really loud on social media, which obviously isn't the whole world, but like this is the kind of stuff that you do to play between you know, the Horizons and the God of Wars. And if this is a big game that was a Sony game and it's $70 there and it's no additional cost on Game Pass, like, you're starting to really build the argument that you should be a multi-platform owner, like, honestly. And if that's not something you can afford, I totally understand that, you know, just don't be toxic to the team that you're not cheering for. But like this, I think it, like, it feels really nice to have a bunch of platforms going, kind of running on all cylinders at the same time right now.
Yeah, it's a really interesting position. I think you sort of mentioning, like, it is, of course, worth noting, like, yes, it is not the be all end all of who's, you know, the loudest on social media each day. But I feel like Xbox has tended to be the louder one on most days. they've definitely tended to have, I think, more of the conversation going. And, you know, a few weeks ago, maybe it was a few weeks ago, who knows at this point, but when the Bethesda acquisition happened, I still totally stand by when I said, and I think we all were kind of on the same page, that, like, PlayStation doesn't need to make any sort of immediate response move. They don't need to go buy 12 studios, because this is Xbox catching up to Sony's first party stable. But right now, what we have going on is this very interesting push and pull of who's taking the sort of the day-to-day mind share. And yes, it is, as you were saying, it's not the Call of Duties of the world or the Last of Us of the world, but telling people, hey, you can get Outriders on day one. Hey, you can get MLB the Show on day one. Or hey, you can get Oddworld. I keep wanting to say Outworlds because there are too many outs in game titles now. On day one with PlayStation Plus. We're seeing this back and forth, and I think because of the nature of Game Pass, they just can save more each day, whereas PlayStation Plus right now is, and PlayStation Now, it's a monthly drop. And so it is definitely worth mentioning. I think since, like, the PS5's launch, I think almost every month there has been a new game available on PlayStation Plus per month, which tended not awesome. To, yeah, it usually was not the case. We've gotten stuff like Bugsnax, Maquette, Oddworld, as you said, is out this week. It's definitely been, you know, there is no maybe anything at, like, an Outriders level of, like, a major third party thing, unless I'm blanking, but there's still been a lot of support, and it's cool to see that. And I think they have to keep that momentum going. But a year or two down the line, I'm just very curious to see what this back and forth of these services looks like. Because I do think right now, like, going into the next few months in terms of, like, Xbox games, their first party stable, we're still waiting on Halo. That is pretty much where we're going. But we do, as you were saying, Brian, we have Returnal this month. We have Deathloop as a PlayStation exclusive at launch next month. We have Ratchet in June. And then we know of a few other things coming later in the year. So, like, we can see the more immediate roadmap for PlayStation. But it's very clear Xbox is playing a long game. And I'm curious to see eventually when those two things really come to a head, what it's going to mean for both of them.
Yeah, and I mean, it's worth mentioning, and everyone knows this, but both of these companies are selling literally every single console that they can make, every single one. And so eventually, you would have to imagine that that's going to slow down, right? That's going to eventually, we'll live in a world where you can walk into a store and see a PS5 on a shelf. I hypothetically, right? it doesn't feel like a real thing that'll actually happen. But that's when I'm wondering, like, what is this, you know, console war race? You know, what are the numbers going to look like at that point? Like, who's going to be winning? Who's going to be dominating? I think that, like, what's happening right now is really interesting. If you look at the push for digital over physical, not necessarily the push, but I would say the audience trend happened specifically during the pandemic last year. It was a trend we saw increasing over and over the years. And last year was the first year that digital sales overtook physical sales for obviously a number of reasons. People didn't really feel like going to the store. They wanted to stay home, convenience, yada, yada. But I do think that, like, these subscription services are not only here to stay, but their value proposition is getting better and better with the reality that I think more and more customers are getting comfortable with treating their libraries as something they can access digitally and not just physically. Most games are released digitally. Like, that's just the reality. There's hundreds of games released every single day. Most of them don't get boxed copies. And so, we've talked in the past about game preservation and all that, and Sony shutting down their stores. I think, like, obviously it's up to them to figure out a way to maintain access to those things down the line. But in the meantime, if someone goes, hey, Outriders is on your Xbox right now, Oddworld is on your PS5, I'm inclined to get those games and start them immediately, as I've been doing all week. Like, yeah. I think that's great. And I think those services are going to become more and more important as that trend moves more and more closer to an all digital future, or a mostly digital future.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, as you had mentioned, we were talking about definitely a bit about game preservation a few weeks ago with the confirmation of the PS3, Vita, and PSP stores completely closing later this year. I did just want to quickly highlight, that Matt Kim on our news team put up a report about how some PlayStation Vita developers weren't properly warned that the PSN store would close down, and essentially some Vita games are either having to be rushed to be able to hit the date to still show up on the store so people can buy them before the stores are closed, or are having to cancel games quite possibly. And so definitely go check out that report if you haven't seen it already. But Matt spoke to a few devs about what's going on. And essentially, there are some earlier dates that we were able to verify of an email that was sent to developers that the last day to submit games to the PlayStation Vita store is July 12th, and the final day to release games on the store is July 20th. The final date to submit a game to Sony's global quality assurance is July 6th, though Sony says it can't guarantee slots for review. So basically anyone who was making a Vita game, and there are still developers making some Vita games, even though, you know, obviously the focus of its lifespan has dwindled for sure. People were still making games for it, and people still really love their Vitas, myself included. And it's this frustrating thing to see that, you know, devs weren't properly warned, I think is the most disappointing part of it. Going back to that game preservation talk that Brian, I know you were part of, and Lucy, I know you were out for, but it's just this, it's this thing that I, like, day by day, I keep going, I have a PS3 in my closet, I have my Vita in a drawer, do I need to go spend $300 to go buy a bunch of these digital games? And also, will it matter? Because the digital games may not be able to, like, my Vita battery may die and I may not be able to find a replacement that doesn't cost $500, for, you know, 3 years from now. Like, there are so many caveats and questions, and it's just such a bummer to think about it. Like, I go through it each day of, I've been platinuming Ratchet & Clank on PS4, and I was like, I want to go back and play some of the old Ratchet & Clanks. The only way to do that is to go pull out my PS3 or to subscribe to PlayStation Now, which does have a bunch of them, but it is, of course, dependent on whatever they put on that subscription service at the time. Go ahead.
No,
sorry.
I was going to say, I've been talking about this a lot on social media, you know, for lack of my better judgment. But I think that, like, a lot of people have been saying, well, just hold on to your old systems. And I think that that's a solution for old people like us. But the thing I worry about, and maybe this is an imagined scenario that doesn't actually exist, is a 10-year-old kid gets a PS5. It's his first video game system. He plays Ratchet and Clank, adores it, and goes, oh, they made more of these? I want to go back and play a bunch of them. And then can only access a select few of them rather than all of them. And to me, that's the kind of thing that's like, if you look at Silent Hill and Metal Gear, and obviously both of those fall under the same evil umbrella. Those are some of the most iconic video game franchises of all time that are next to impossible to access easily across most platforms. You know, like, you can stream them some in some ways on PS Now. There was that Silent Hill collection that was, like, really shoddy. That's, like, you know, really hard to find. Doesn't run on modern consoles and stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff that I worry about. Is sort of, you have these iconic, legendary, important franchises that are just integral to the sort of, like, the pillars of this medium that we all love so much, and people can't access them. I don't think that, like, finding a dirty PS3 on Facebook Marketplace and rolling the dice and hoping it's not full of, like, weed and cockroaches, maybe you want those things, is not the solution for most consumers. I think that most consumers want ease of use. They want the ability to be able to push a button on their controller, turn on their TV, and just start playing Metal Gear. And they can't in a lot of ways. So that's the kind of stuff that I hope gets maintained and streamlined in the future. The Vita thing is interesting because I think a lot of people balked at that too. They're like, why are you still making a Vita game? Sony was still sending out dev kits. That's why they were making Vita games. Because if you wanted a dev kit to make a game, you could do that. You know, and there are people still making SNES games and Genesis games and stuff like that. They're, you know, they're basically bootlegs at this point, but, like, there's, you know, there's always a market for those things.
Yeah. And it's a weird position to be in right now. As you were saying, I was thinking about, like, I do eventually want to play the Metal Gear Solid games because I've never played them. The only place to play, and I know it's not necessarily the most beloved with time, but the only place to play 4 is on a PS3. And if you don't have that, oh, my light just flicked off. It's very unhappy with me talking about this. Oh, it's coming back. This is great. For the audio listeners, nothing important happened.
Nothing happened. Don't worry.
It's. I just
he didn't. Maybe, he didn't say which light. It could be like his internal.
True. There may be a ghost. I don't know. But anyway, it's just one of those weird things where it's like, okay, I think I can buy Metal Gear Solid 1 on PC, or I guess I could use a PlayStation Classic, and then 2 and 3. It might actually be better to play them on Xbox backward compatibility and then find a PS3 to play. It's just this weird case of things. And it's the same with like Ratchet and Clank. I can play some on PS Now or my PS3. We're just in this spotty place, and I wish there was a solution for it.
I mean, me too. It's so sad. And it's such a culmination of factors, you know, and it happened so kind of fast. You know, I played all the PlayStation Classics because I've had every PlayStation system since they began. I grew up with Metal Gear Solid and all that sort of stuff, and it didn't even cross my mind that you wouldn't be able to go back and play those games. Mm-hmm. And like, of course, because we've moved, not only have we moved generations of systems, but we've moved from a primarily physical based sort of economy to a digital one, and that presents a whole slew of brand new problems, you know. And it's just it's so much more, because if you try and compare it to film, because I know obviously there are film historians and people trying to preserve the, you know, the originals and the records as well, like there are, each medium has its own sort of issues to face, but I can't think of one that is as complicated and complex as preserving games,
totally,
and being able to actually play old games. There are so many like spanners in the works to access those, which is really sad. And it's, you know, I feel like it's only a conversation. I know that there have been game historians working on this stuff for years and years, and shout out to them, you know, the Frank Cifoldis of the world. But it's only something that's really kind of come to my attention in the last, you know, in the last several years, because I guess, as I said, it happened so fast.
Right.
And there are people like you, Jorno, who are saying, I never played Metal Gear and I don't know how to really. And the only way to do it is through this ridiculously convoluted series of hoops.
And there's people,
it sucks.
There are fans doing this, right? There are fans preserving. They're building the architecture to, you know, effectively convince their PCs that they're PlayStations, which is amazing. And I love that. I love them for that. Yeah. And, you know, obviously that is one method. You can, you know, head into the dark waters of piracy if you want. Like, but in terms of like legal means for the average consumer, it's definitely kind of tricky. I genuinely think that the big roadblock in the history of PlayStation is the cell architecture of the PS3. That feels like that was the thing that came in. That Suez Canal boat or whatever.
Like, it was exactly the Suez Canal boat.
Yeah, it just got stuck. And like, if you look at, you know, the PS2 played PS1 games, the PS3 had the 60 gigabyte launch SKU that was like sunsetted rather quickly, that was backwards compatible, but development was notoriously a nightmare for the PS3. And then if you look at the PS4 and the PS5, those communicate really well, you know, like the backwards compatibility from PS4 to PS5 is great. Like you can play all your PS4 games or 99% of them on PS5. No problem. It's great. The PS3 is really that thing that just came in and just broke everything.
Yeah,
I feel like they just handcuffed so much of their tech to it too. Like the fact that the changing your PSN name thing became like a meme for like the longest time because they built it on that like weird giant boat.
Oh yeah,
got it stuck.
I'm sure they will never officially say, but like it can't help but feel like so many of the things that took PlayStation a decade to make happen, like changing your PSN names or some of the other PlayStation Network changes that we've seen, even stuff like crossplay and things like that. It feels like so much of it was tied to decisions made back then.
Yeah.
That have to have either been untangled or just completely reworked. And so like I could maybe understand on a corporate level. Again, we talked about this. I can very much see businessmen in a room or in a Zoom saying like, oh, it will cost this much money to, you know, salvage everything from that generation. We would expect this many people to buy that stuff and it just doesn't equate. And I get that, but it's like, it's such a larger thing to think about too, because yeah, it is like there are pieces of PlayStation history we just can't easily access or show to newer generations. And yes, mm-hmm. not everyone is going to want to play the oldest Gran Turismo, sure. But like Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, technically, I think, like as far as we know, is a sequel to Into the Nexus, which was on the PS3 and can only be played on there or PS Now. And it's this strange sort of like, well, okay, if people really want to dive into that franchise's history, there's a few specific things they have to do to get to it. And they can't necessarily own a copy themselves anymore.
Mm-hmm. And also it's, I'm turning into one of those like old ladies who is really kind of insistent, well, not insistent, but would really like the, you know, the younger generations to have a degree of fluency in what has come before and to understand what helped build the blocks to the games that we play today. You know, like for me, I think I sort of see Metal Gear Solid as like kind of like an important, oh God, I sound like such a wanker, but it's kind of like an important game to play. Like it's an important text. And, you know, if I eventually am in charge of a child, I
like the way you phrase that.
Are you describing parenting?
I'm describing parenting. I don't know why I needed to say it like that. If I am ever a legal guardian of a human being, I would want them, and they show a passion for video games. I would want them to play all those games. It's like my dad showed me all, you know, the classic horror movies when I was a kid and showed an interest in those. And like, it's just learning where the games came from and having an appreciation of the medium, right?
Yeah, totally.
And it's one of those things where it feels like, you know, going back to Brian's mention of the cell, it feels like they're handcuffed to decisions from the past. And I can understand how tough those things are. But I wish we were seeing some hint of a solution to it, because it does feel like one of those things where it's quite possibly as long as PlayStation Now exists, maybe that's the only way you can play, you know, Infamous 1 and 2. But for a franchise, if you want to see the evolution of Sucker Punch, you can either do that or hopefully find a PS3 or things like that. And Lucy, as you were saying, like for people who want to play the Metal Gear Solid franchise, you have to go through all these weird steps or hope Konami puts them on PC. We're just in this weird in-between state. And I think it hurts more when we see the Xbox focus on backward compatibility. That, granted, has been a, you know, nearly decade long focus for them, like since Phil Spencer announced it in 2015, I think. Like that has clearly been a benchmark of what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. Nintendo decides to do it sometimes and then not the other time when we all want them to do it. But this is, I feel like, really one of the first crucial points where PlayStation has to make this decision. And we're going to see the ramifications of that in the years to come.
Yeah, and I was going to say real quick, if you're wondering why people like us are always saying we wish PlayStation did this thing that Xbox is doing in terms of backwards compatibility, it's because old PlayStation games are better.
They're so much better.
They're so much better. I see these stats getting thrown around all the time where people were like, well, if you look at the number of people who played Xbox 360 games on Xbox One, it wasn't a lot. So obviously backwards compatibility is dead. And it's like, okay, well, first of all, you took a incredibly small audience from a console that never actually released sales data, and you asked them to play a bunch of games from an era that wasn't even like the best era. Like,
right.
This is what I'm saying. If you put the Metal Gear Solid collection on PS5 tomorrow, you'd sell a million copies. Mm-hmm. Super Mario 64 and friends sold like 10 million units on Switch. There is an audience for this stuff. Like it can sell. You can make it. This is not just a funny thing we're asking for. You make money doing this. You make a lot of money putting these old ass games on new consoles. Like just do it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a bummer not to have a solution to that, especially when we're getting new entries in series, and I'd love for there to be an easily accessible way to be like, oh, well, you want to see more? It's all on PS5 right now, and you can go download those old games, but you just can't do that right now. It's a bummer. Hopefully we'll see some sort of solution, but in the meantime, if you have access to a PS3 or a Vita, go buy some of the games you want to make sure you can have at least a copy of while those consoles still work for you, because I probably am going to do the same in the coming weeks.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Other than that, though, just on the news front, did want to, of course, mention, since we've definitely talked about E3 at length on the show before, E3 is officially coming back this year. They've announced that they are returning as an all digital show, which will be free. There was some discussion on Twitter about whether or not people would pay to go to E3 or not via a digital version of it. A whole bunch of people are announced for it, like Nintendo, Xbox, Capcom, Konami, maybe Metal Gear, Ubisoft, Take-Two Interactive, Warner Brothers. I want to say Koch, but is it Kosh?
It's Coke. Coke Media.
It's Coke. Okay.
Yeah, which is not like the Coke brothers. You know, those
Like, I don't like any of it. Yeah, yeah, I'm not a fan of them. Yeah. But anyway, all of those companies are confirmed to be there. Obviously, we won't know what the show will look like until we get a little closer. It's taking place from June 12th to 15th. But of course, pretty noticeably on the list of those not attending, which also includes companies like EA, which will probably be doing its own EA Play, Square Enix, Sega, Bandai Namco, and a few others. Of course, Sony is not on there. And I wanted to bring this up and basically ask, are either of you surprised by that? Because I'm not.
Not at all.
No.
So definitively unsurprised.
Yeah. I'm actually more surprised that anybody, the other people showed up. I mean,
to be honest, same. Like, it's you know, Sony's been absent from E3 for a while. I don't really understand. There's no kind of real incentive for it to appear at a digital E3, especially as it's got its own kind of marketing PR beat now that is extremely digital. Mm-hmm. I'm also surprised that other people turned up to the table. I do understand the argument that, you know, last year there were a lot of other digital events that were kind of muddied the waters a little bit and made everyone have to pay attention to a billion things. But ultimately, I don't really see that super changing, even with this E3. Like, we've still got Jeff Keighley's, you know, Summer Fest or whatever it's called. And, you know, we've got our own stuff going on, and there's still going to be a lot happening around this period of time. I don't think E3 is going to just come in and make everything into one single E3 anymore. And, you know, it was already splintering out before the pandemic, and I don't see that changing. So, yeah, right. You know, I love the idea that it's just going to be like only E3 again, but no, it's not.
Yeah, we can't ignore the last year and how much everything split out from that. And yeah, as you were saying, it doesn't surprise me any station won't be there. The PS5 event, I remember when we were watching the reveal in June, and obviously they won't be revealing as big as a new console this year, but they'll have plenty of big games to show. But that was hitting over 1 million concurrents on Twitch at one point. Twitch or one of or YouTube, one of the streams was that high. And so they're probably pretty okay if they just want to do things themselves, especially for a digital focused event.
Yeah. Like, that's why this is so surprising to me. Everyone is like, this feels like when your friend is dating someone and they break up and you talk so much shit about them together, and then they get back together, and then you're like, oh, well, I'm really happy for you. Sorry, I said all that stuff last year. That's what it feels like right now. Because we spent all of last year being like, who needs E3? Do we even need E3? And I remember being like, I miss E3. I love E3. I'm still excited for E3, but also, who needs it? Like, there's no justifiable reason to attach yourself to these two shapes that have been existing for decades to get your messaging out, because everyone proved last year there was no E3, and we had one of the biggest years in video game history. Sony crushed it. You know, they debuted new consoles, and Microsoft had their own presentations. Nintendo had presentations. Everyone had presentations, and none of them, they were all sprawled across this like summer shaped thing. And then even beyond that into the fall, but no one was really like, you know, oh man, how are we going to get our announcement out without like the ESA telling us it's okay to do that? Like, it's bizarre to me, but I'm happy it's back either way. Cause I like having all of this stuff condensed into a few day window, or most of it. I definitely recognize that there's going to be tons of events that are way outside of this 3 day window from June 12th to June 15th, but it's cool. It's cool. Like, it's also, we don't have to, you know, like, it's, I think the actual physical building of E3 is probably the part that was dying the hardest over the last few years. Like, the actual shared space of a place where people could come and, I don't know, hear noises.
It's going to be hard to convince all of those people. Like, obviously we don't know what they're charging people to be part of this, but it's probably going to be very hard to convince those companies to rent out that LA Convention Center booth space again, when they can probably get just as much of a return on digital events and going to smaller things like PAX.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, because those were not cheap things to be a part of, as like leaked documents have shown. It was an expensive thing to be part of E3, and especially when you see companies like Microsoft owns the theater next door now to the convention center. So if they want to do something, they can just put it in their own space.
No, E3, ironically, was one of the only time that like AAA publishers got microtransactioned. Because E3 would be like, oh, you want a rug in your booth? That'll be $75,000. Like, they were buying horse armor left and right in that motherfucker.
Oh my god. I have a question. Like, I to be honest, I didn't pay too much attention to this announcement, aside from E3 is back, and that was kind of like, have they sort of addressed, like, because obviously a big part of E3 is not just the news side, it's also like giving people the opportunity to go hands-on with upcoming games. Mm-hmm. Was that part of like the press release? Like, was there kind of, because I'm curious as to how that is going to work if you need some kind of a buy-in.
I have the release open right here, and it officially says after they name everyone who will be a part of it, it says developers will be showcasing their latest news and games directly to fans around the world. The ESA will be working with media partners globally to help amplify and make this content available to everyone for free. But it doesn't say anything about what will be on hand for people. I know there was some discussion and some reporting on potentially there being, you know, like virtual demos for press going on. I think something like Keighley's Summer Games Fest and the Game Awards, like they tend to do, here's a bunch of, like in partnership, here's a bunch of game demos on Steam. Like I could potentially see something like that. But as of right now, we really don't have an idea of what the show is going to look like for people watching from home, because this does also completely break down those walls. Like Lucy, as you're asking, it's making me think there's no reason that, like, if there's a demo they can offer to 100 of us via streaming, can they not offer it to, you know, 500,000 people on Steam and get all right. of that feedback? Like as a developer, probably they would want as much feedback as possible as a demo. You know, there are certain cases where they won't and things will be hands off and whatnot, mm-hmm. but like, if you're confident in a thing, I don't see why you would limit it just to press at that point.
I mean, you know, again, that's the way that it's all been going anyway, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, as soon as E3 started opening its doors to the public, and, you know, obviously the YouTube and Twitch ecosystem has broadened everything out. It makes no sense to give press the sole exclusive on these things anymore. As much as it was fun to like be like, oh, well, I was one of three people to have played that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
So, you know.
In the past, it was always kind of broken down. Like there was that thing Judges Week, which, you know, was like a week or two before E3, where you would basically get, it was like a week long preview. You all know, I'm just explaining to the audience. It was a week long preview event where, you know, press would basically get together and then play a bunch of different games that would be revealed or announced at E3 that would then be playable on the show floor. Sometimes there was also show floor demos that the general public in the last few years could access if they stood in line for long hours. But then there was also like those weird behind closed doors demos where like someone, either you'd be playing it or a dev would be playing it in front of you. But for it to be eligible for like an IGN award, someone would have to actually be interact. You couldn't just be like Game of the Year, Metroid Prime 4 logo, you know? And so last year we all used this thing called Parsec, which was awesome. And I think a lot of like the general audience knows about it too. It's basically, you know, cloud gaming for upcoming games or for any game really. And I played a bunch of like pre-release Ubisoft stuff through preview events through that. And it worked amazingly. Like it is phenomenal. It is, you don't need, they are able to basically play the, like broadcast the game to you playable at a level that is better than, you know, your PC will probably be able to handle it, which is super, super cool. It's a lot of, you know, what Stadia has been attempting to do, and xCloud and such. I would love to see that available to the general public. If not, then, you know, make a PS5 demo that, you know, self-destructs at the end of E3. Like make a virtual, you know, show floor where you can open up an app on your PS5 and there's a bunch of different kiosks you can turn into. And I think I said this last year too, like just make a first person E3 show floor and let people walk up to booths and access demos and stuff like that. And if they have to go away after a few days because you don't want the entire internet blowing your, you know, demo to smithereens and pulling out every single part of it. Like, obviously there's, you know, that when you put a show floor demo out for E3, that limits the amount of people that can play it and write about it and the amount of bad variables that can pop up. Whereas if you just put that thing on the internet, you know, people are going to be digging through the source code and be like, I found Sephiroth. Like,
Yeah. So, true.
There's obviously, you'll have to find a solution between those things, but I really, really, really hope they make demos available to the general public. I really, really hope that's a thing this year.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
I mean, that's one of my favorite. I'm always a big proponent of more demos because I think they can be like such exciting experiences for someone who especially for consumers who can maybe only buy a couple games a year, you can really find something you love by getting to play 20 minutes of it versus just seeing a bunch of very hype cut trailers put out for you.
I'd love to see a bunch of like mood pieces drop, like the Resident Evil Village demo.
Oh yeah, that was so great.
That's a great idea, just letting people kind of like putz around the environment and put you know, the Lion Key in the door and stuff.
And that way that kind of it avoids that whole like digging around in the source code.
It's something that I think there's a lot of exciting potential for. It we'll obviously have to see how this show exists this year and then what it looks like in years to come, but I definitely think, just to bring it back to Sony, I am sure we'll still get some presentations from them. I know it brings up the question of like, where will the PlayStation be in all this? They'll put out a state of play when they want to. There's enough big games in the next 3 months for them to focus on that I think we're going to get probably some individual focused state of plays and things, probably on Deathloop and Ratchet and whatnot. And then of course there's the big questions of stuff like Horizon and God of War, which is still slated for this year. For now. But it's one of those things where they have plenty to talk about, but I think pretty clearly Sony's going to talk about it when they want to. So we'll just have to wait for that. But in the meantime, there is plenty to talk about in terms of games we've been playing. And Lucy, I did want to start with you because I know you've been playing a game that I've only been able to play a little bit of, but I know that you've been loving, Disco Elysium.
Yes. So I was waiting to play Disco Elysium on console just because I air towards console as opposed to PC. And obviously I was stoked that it was on the PS5. I've been loving it with caveats. I think clearly that the bones and the story, and it's a great game. All there, the game is, the fundamentals are fantastic. I think the story, the writing so far has been remarkable, like really remarkable. Like this is the kind of I've not been skipping through things. Everything I've wanted to read, and there's a lot of text, there's a lot of dialogue. Like every character that you talk to has a lot to say, and obviously there are a lot of branching dialogue options and all that sort of thing. And every character is really unique and memorable. The town itself is just so real and cohesive and European in a really depressing way. It's stunning. Like it's stunning, and it's constantly just, I've wanted to just be in this world and sort of get lost in it. I will say that it is a little clunky on the PlayStation. I found that the UI is clunky. Movement is clunky. It feels very much like a PC game that's kind of just been awkwardly ported to the PlayStation. Movement is like, instead of just naturally walking up a staircase, you kind of have to click on the staircase, which will take your character back to a certain spot, and then he moves from that certain spot up the stairs. You know, it's sort of like that kind of movement, which is very, which can be really, really awkward. And so there are just parts of it I feel like that hasn't been completely optimized for a controller, which is a little disappointing. But ultimately, it's still a really, really fantastic game. I just wanted to give, you know, anyone who was thinking of buying it, maybe just a little heads up, because I imagine that this will get patched. Obviously, the devs are very invested in improvements and sort of life improvements of this game, hence the fact that we've got, like, you know, full dialogue now instead of just text, and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's a great game. It's just a little awkward. I think that is how I would like to sort of end my verdict of it on PlayStation 5. But you know, again, if you're interested in something really kind of thoughtful and depressing and funny and bizarre, and not bizarre in an irritating, contrived way, like just genuinely different, please check it out. It's I'm loving it. Yeah,
I've maybe only played an hour or two, and I definitely ran into some of the same clunkiness that you were referring to. Luckily, I will say, apparently, a patch for it is going out today as we're recording, Cool.
Oh, nice.
That will fit. That will fix things like interacting in certain locations not working, items loading weirdly, smoother controller and interaction experience, VO issues, and that there will be another patching coming. But apparently the team like really rushed to get this patch together. So thank you to those devs for doing that, because, yeah, I agree with you in terms of, I think the core of what that game is so clearly brilliant, but there was just some interface things that were holding it back a little bit. So hopefully this addresses some of those issues. It probably is something that will be in the end better with keyboard and mouse no matter what, but there's clearly something so fascinating about this world that I can't wait to get back to. I absolutely can't wait to discover more of it. It's just so clever and smart. I love it. But in addition to that, Brian, have you been playing anything that you...
Yeah, I played the first few hours of Oddworld, and I believe it's my first time playing one of those games in a very long time, so I am not up to speed on the lore or why the weird men are so muscular.
What was the last one? Was it Stranger's, Stranger's Wrath was the last one, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Back on the original Xbox.
So there was technically New and Tasty in 2014, which was a remake of one.
Right.
But yeah, I believe right. Before that, because you know, I started it last night too, and then went on a deep dive of like, what the hell is this franchise? Because mm-hmm. I do not know it at all.
Yeah, it's like definitely one of my blind spots, and it is a big franchise. Like, it's been around for a very long time, and you know, people really enjoy it. But this is just something I don't have a lot of experience with. I will say on PS5, it's super fun. Like, it's gross and weird, but I wasn't really expecting it to be sort of like such a smart, fun, innovative platforming game. Like I think I just thought this was a slightly different genre, but it's like a fun action game. Like the double jumping feels great. The environments are awesome. Reminds me a lot of like the last two Donkey Kong Country Returns games, Tropical Freeze and the other one. In terms of like, you are bum rushing through this environment that is constantly destructing and exploding and collapsing and deteriorating. And there isn't really a lot of like turning back and all that, you know, it's very Rube Goldberg. You just kind of run down the line. But I really dig it. I'm not big on like the throwing mechanic. There's like this thing where you basically craft bottles and collect things and then throw them to put out fires. I've hated that. That's just a pet peeve. I've hated that since like Yoshi's Island. I just don't like it. I don't like anything where you have to like do that dotted line thing and
you're using the right stick to align everyone. Yeah.
It just feels weird to me, but everything else has been super fun, even though I don't, like I said, don't know a lot about this lore. It's really gorgeous. If you have a PS5, please check this game out. If you don't, I believe you can add PS5 games to your library through the app, and they'll be there for you when you do get a PS5 eventually, whether you're trying to buy one or you're just saving up waiting until it's got a bigger library. Yeah, add this to your account and give it a shot. It's so weird.
Yeah, I was trying to explain it to my girlfriend last night, because it's one of those things where, as you were saying, it's like these very muscular aliens are involved in essentially an uprising against a corporate overlord. That's also a puzzle platformer / stealth game. With crafting.
I mean, I used to play these games when I was a kid. My lasting memory, I always enjoyed them. My lasting memory was like, it was the first game where you could fart on command. and I remember, you know, we would sit down and just be like, you know, just like making the noise over and over again. That's how we got our kicks back in the back in the 90s.
There were a surprising amount of games back then where you could do that, actually. Like more than five, I would say.
yeah. I'm glad to hear that its spirit remains intact, because everything that you're sort of saying is like, oh yeah, that's what I remember from playing all the Oddworld games.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of trial and error to it for me, at least with like the stealth sections. Like, I'll definitely be like, oh well, I thought that jump would work, but it didn't, so I'll just do this the next time. Like, luckily the load times aren't bad. There is a thing that I've been enjoying, that essentially like collecting and finding secret areas and everything is also gamified per level, so you earn like bronze, silver, gold, platinum tiers of basically in-game trophies before you gain out-of-game trophies of like finding all of the secret areas or searching through every vase that's in the background of an area for items and stuff. So there's definitely a lot to keep you going and excuses to get back to it if you're enjoying it. But yeah, it's a weird one I didn't expect, but I'm enjoying it so far too.
Brian, this is what PlayStation Plus is all about for me, you know.
Yeah,
like it's stuff like this. It's not just about old games. Like if you throw me a game like this that I was apprehensive about spending $70 on, because I would not have played this game otherwise. And so, you know, thumbs up.
Yeah, it especially with like feeling like I had missed the boat on this franchise, which like going into this is technically somewhat of a remake of the second game, but also much bigger. And this was supposed to originally be a 5-part series, but they've started remaking it, so they only got to like part 3. There's a lot going on in Oddworld, but I'm kind of digging it, and I kind of want to keep exploring this world. I know, Brian, you had also been talking about checking out stuff on Game Pass. Have you started Outriders, or have you not been able to?
Yeah, I actually have a Let's Play video going up with Greg Miller from Kind of Funny and Alfredo Diaz from Funhouse, Rooster Teeth, where we jumped into like a pretty high level kind of later game stuff. And that is fun as hell. Like, I'm not a multiplayer shooter guy. I'm actually playing through the campaign single player right now. But man, that game is super fun with a couple people all juggling different classes and healing each other and stacking all their abilities and stuff like that. The creature design is awesome. Like, I wasn't expecting a lot of the enemy design to be like so kind of like, I don't know, 90s monster movie. Like, it gets like, they just have a lot of fun with
a lot
of the alien creature design, and the gunplay feels great. Yeah, I dig it. Like, this is, again, one of those things I don't think I would have like dropped $70 on it, but I'm totally having fun with it too.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited to get into, especially knowing that it's like there have definitely been a lot of server issues going on with it over the last week. But knowing that it essentially is not like a live service game where they're, like it is a complete package right now. Like, you can play through, there's a campaign and everything to enjoy. So yeah, I'm excited to jump in and see, like, there's very clearly a wacky sensibility for the weapons and the powers and stuff. So I can't wait to jump into that. On my end, I platinumed Ratchet & Clank, which I am more excited for Rift Apart than ever, for sure. I really, really hope they let you track your progress with trophies in that one, because I think most Ratchet & Clank fans know there is a trophy in the PS4 game where you have to make every enemy dance with the disco weapon, essentially, but it doesn't track it for you. So you have no idea which enemies you have made dance or not. So I played through the game 3 times to make sure I could get, which was an experience. It was one of those things where I was like, I've committed. I'm just going to do this, because at this point, this is the last damn thing. That and like one weapon.
Honestly, Donna, I don't know whether to like shake your hand or give you a wedgie. Like, I'm.
So it's one of those things for me. I think I am. Like, I think it's fair to say I'm the one who is most invested in trophy hunting of this show, but definitely, yes, to a point. Like, there are very much things where I will accept, like, it is not worth the time I am putting in. This was sort of a thing where, like, I've collected most of the things. This is a franchise I have absolutely adored. I want a Ratchet & Clank fix, and even though I was just kind of replaying through the same levels, it's just so fun to mess around with those weapons and to make enemies dance before turning them into goats, while also having a little Zircon bot tell you how much they enjoy killing these enemies while shooting at them. Like, there's just so much fun silliness going on around me that it was all right to be going through it in that case. But there are definitely games where I'm like, no, I'm not going to put in the 80 hours for this one trophy. I won't do it. It's not worth it. I have my limits.
This is why I don't mess with this stuff, though. It's the same reason I don't, like, you know, smoke cigarettes once a year, because I don't have that ability. Like, I'll just fall in. Like, I have it's to keep myself from doing this. I'll play through the game 3 times, making everybody dance. I have that part of my brain that unlocks and opens and goes, you're compelled. You must do this. So I have to talk myself out of it.
Yeah, I basically commit. It's kind of like PlayStation first party games, because I think now, like over the last couple of years, their trophy lists have gotten reasonable. Like, they very much understand. But if a game has like a difficulty setting trophy, if it's like beat the game on normal and hard and crushing and super crushing and the difficulty that will make you cry, like, I'm not going to do that. That's not worth it for me. That's not fun. But I'm glad I have it, and I cannot wait for Rift Apart. I also am continuing to play Sekiro. I got through Gunfort, I guess it's called. And as Red has up, I have yet to beat the Guardian Ape, but I spent like 3 hours on Saturday fighting fighting this damn ape, this damn monkey man.
Damn dirty ape.
And when it gets to the turn of the boss fight, which I guess spoilers if you're watching the video version, you think you've won and you haven't. I have not been able to beat its second phase, but I'm all in on Sekiro. I just adore it. It's so much fun. I've really been loving this exploration of FromSoft games, but when you realize the tricks they pull off and some of this stuff, it like you feel that moment of like, oh, you assholes, you like the glee you must have felt in programming this moment. But I'm really enjoying understanding each boss fight. It is one of those things where I'm also like I'm live streaming the whole experience, and luckily the audience has been very kind about not spoiling things. There have not really been any mean people in chat who are telling me literally how to do every little bit of the game. So I've been able to enjoy and experience it like pretty organically.
I feel like a FromSoft audience, like the people who play that game, the FromSoft community, I should say, rather, they're a very like kind, welcoming bunch. I remember when I did one or two times I've ever streamed in my life, I played through Bloodborne and I streamed a bunch of that, and everyone was so generous with their feedback and so sort of kind in chat and like ready to jump in if I needed to ring my little bell. It was a really lovely experience. I'm glad you're having a similar time.
I think that audience gets a bad rap for like the get good stuff,
right?
That they're, you know, sort of like a bunch of hard-ass gatekeepers that are, you know, telling people that if they suck they shouldn't bother. But that is like one of the warmest, most connected communities, that constantly deciphering the bizarre obtuse nonsense in the back end of all of these games and helping people out. Like it's really, really cool. It's also, yeah. I love watching people get their ass kicked by
that's from some boss. I'm so appreciative of everyone who sat and like, it literally was like a 2.5-3 hour stream over the weekend. And it was like, I still haven't won. I'm going back to it this weekend. I'm hoping to beat them this time. But yeah, it's one of those things that there are absolutely people out there who will try to pop in and be like, well, you just need to be better at the game. Why aren't you doing X, Y, and Z? And it's like, all right, hold on. But so many people have come in and be like, do you need help or do you want help? Do you want to figure this out for yourself? Like, we're here if you need us, but let's let you experience this on your own, because they know how exciting it is to get to those moments, especially when you put yourself through so much crap to get there. So I'm really having a blast with it. I can't wait until we can get back to Bloodborne, but this has definitely been a great fix in the meantime. But other than that, I need to get back to Disco, and I've just been popping in and out of things. So we'll have plenty more to talk about, but it feels like the games are starting to come. Like the April and May release calendar, I don't think is going to change too much. We have stuff like Returnal and Deathloop coming, a few other games on there as well. Resident Evil is at the beginning of May. It's going to be an exciting couple of weeks for us to be talking about stuff. I'm looking forward to it. Before we wrap up, do have a memory card for the week. I was going to read one, but because we had joked about horror movies earlier in this episode, someone wrote in as we're recording asking about a haunted game they think they experienced, and are essentially asking for calls of whether or not they had a haunted game or probably something else really messed up was happening.
What kind of dumb ghost would haunt one game?
Just you wait until you find out what game it was too. John wrote in to beyond@ign.com like you can for our memory card segment. Please write in with the subject line memory card, as it helps me find them in my inbox, and wrote in and said, sometime around 1997, when I was 11 years old, my neighbor friend who was about 14 was playing a video game with me. We were in my living room playing the Die Hard trilogy on PlayStation 1. After 2 or 3 hours of gameplay, something weird happened. We heard a creepy woman's voice come from the TV, one that was never heard before or after, and the woman's voice said, "I see you and your friend are enjoying the game." This was creepy because the voice sounded out of place for a PlayStation 1 game, a PlayStation 1 game that was single player, in a voice that was never heard before or after in that experience. We both stood up without saying anything to one another and ran out of the house. My friend ended up going home, and I waited outside until one of my parents came home, and they just kind of brushed the story aside. Have any of you experienced anything weird? And also is asking if anyone out there has heard this voice while playing the Die Hard trilogy.
That is bizarre.
you could not have given me there was no amount of money. Like, I would have correctly had guessed the Die Hard trilogy would be the haunted game that this would have been about.
No, that is a weird one. Oh my God. That is really genuinely creepy. That's like, I mean, you know, this is sort of like Middle Gear Solid kind of right? stuff, but that's not what you would expect from the Die Hard trilogy.
Yeah, not a game I would have thought to experience that from. And so if you've experienced that, please write in and let us know to let this reader or listener know they're not alone. And if they are alone, I feel like especially in the 90s, there were a lot of toys that were like, tune into a radio wave frequency and mess with your friends and family. Maybe mm-hmm. this was just someone, like another neighbor being an asshole. I don't know.
Older woman neighbor.
Or that, yeah. That's the part that raises a lot of other disturbing problems, if that's what was happening.
My friends and I used to play GoldenEye on N64 through like a Game Shark, where you could just like load up tons of bizarre codes.
Yeah.
Like outside of the weird cheats that were baked into the game that you could unlock. And there were like some bizarre modifiers that you could put on that would essentially turn the entire game into just like downshift the pitch like crazy and mess with all the colors, so it'd be like,
oh, no.
Murder, murder. And like every time you killed somebody, it was so creepy. It was called like Halloween mode or something like that.
That's
and
amazing.
It legit felt haunted. Like Pierce Brosnan was running around just like melting. It's awful. So much fun. I should find footage of it.
I think we've talked about it on the show before. I think when our guest Ray was on, but more games should have silly cheats in them. I miss those days. Yeah. But anyway, John, thank you so much for writing in. We're sorry you had that experience. To any other viewers and listeners out there, let us know if you have experienced the same thing in the Die Hard trilogy on PlayStation 1. I will also take any other haunted stories because I love creepypasta online. I will happily read any of those stories. So if anyone has those,
yes, let's just turn this show into like My Favorite Murder, but for video games.
I would love that if it was My Favorite Video Game. We'll figure out a better name. There's got to be there's copyright infringement I don't want to get into. My Favorite Murder, keep doing what you're doing. I'm sure things are going well for you. But anyway, thank you so much.
You have a favorite murder. No one should have a favorite murder.
I mean, there's the whole, you know. If you have any other haunted stories, please write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card. Whether it's Halloween week or not, we'll read them. Or if you have any other stories you want to share, please write in. And we love sharing them on the show each week. Thank you to everyone who has written in so far. But that's pretty much going to wrap us up for this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. Brian and Lucy, before we wrap up, anything that you've been working on or anything on the teams that you want to promote before we wrap up?
Let's see. I've been writing these things you didn't know scripts about like big movies that were, you know, or franchises and stuff like that. I did one on Kong vs. Godzilla, which is super fun. It's just a bunch of like bizarre sort of behind the scenes making of factoids. And then I just wrote one for the 1995 Mortal Kombat movie in anticipation for the new reboot. And that was super, super fun. A lot of just weird old dirt I dug up about that wonderful, wonderful film.
It was great. And we've got some more coming from you in the works as well.
That's right.
Yes. And go ahead, Liz.
I have got a request for recommendations, actually. While I was recovering from surgery, I got back into comics, like just casually, because it's so daunting. Like, I used to read a lot of comics when I was a kid, and then, you know, I went through puberty and everything sort of, my tastes changed. But, you know, like I read the Onslaught series from the old X-Men, like 96, 97 run, I think it was. And I enjoyed it. And I'd also forgotten how sort of soap opera-y comics are. Like it's really is a story a week. I mean, you know, there's carry through and thematic sort of continuity. And obviously there's like an overarching story, but so many of those like single issues are like, here's what the X-Men are facing today. And by the way, like this Onslaught thing is happening in the background. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. It's, you know, so pulpy. It made me even more impressed with what the MCU has achieved, actually. But yeah, like I, you know, X-Men was always the comic series that I read as a kid. So if there's anything else I should read, the Onslaught series again was the one that I read as a kid. So, you know, it's kind of like comfort reading, but if there's anything that I really should read, then please let me know, because it was really enjoyable.
Have you messed with Junji Ito?
I have not.
Oh my God. Okay. So the next time I see you, which is hopefully soon, I'm going to just give you a stack of books and also the Bloodborne graphic novels. Cause they're super fun too. Junji Ito has been doing like horror, like black and white Japanese horror comics forever. And they're all compendium of short stories. You've seen his work everywhere. It was one of those things where I was just like, oh, I might like this. And I pulled on the thread a little bit and then just fell in and just bought every one of his books. I've read all of his stuff now. It's phenomenal.
See, that's the kind of recommendation I need. Like, just for context, I have read a lot of like the Comics 101. Like I've read, you know, Fable and Sandman and all of those Preacher, you know, read all of those. But like, I'm interested in things like that. Like things that are kind of like, I might not have read or, yeah. So please.
Of recent stuff, and I also can give you stuff to borrow. If you want recent X-Men, they essentially did a big reboot and some of it's really, really good. I can lend you all of those issues
because
I haven't figured out what to do with them. But yeah, they started essentially with a two-part like House of X and Powers of X that essentially made X-Men relevant again after Marvel kind of downplayed them for so long. And it's really dense. Excuse me, in some of the lore, but there's some really, really good, cool stuff in there. I can also give you, and this is just a general recommendation, obviously as a big Spider-Man fan, there was a recent run called The Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. And it's a really good like short run. It's only like 12 or 13 issues. It's relatively short, but there's one episode in there. I think it introduces a new Spider-Man called Spider-Bite. And it legitimately is one of the most emotional comics I have ever read. I was crying by the end of it. It's really, really good and impactful. Even if you don't read the rest of that run, like I'll just give you that issue. It's so good. I highly recommend it. But non-superhero, I'm trying to think. Die is really good. It's essentially like a Jumanji D&D series, but even if you're not a big D&D person, it's just really, really well written and the art's beautiful. That one's really great. But yeah, I'll think of some more. I also have a ton that I can let you borrow because Meredith is like, what? We just have all these loose comics. What are we going to do with them? And like,
okay. Once we all get vaccinated, we're going to have a comic book party where we also hug each other and drink a lot.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes. I love it. I'm into it.
Sounds perfect. I can't wait for that. But until then, this has been Podcast Beyond episode 695. Thank you so much out there for listening and watching. You can find us not just on IGN.com, beyond.IGN.com, youtube.com/IGN Games, which is the new home of Beyond and all our shows on YouTube, as well as your favorite podcast services around the world. But you can also find us on Twitter. I am at JM Dornbush. Brian is at Agent Bizzle and Lucy is at Luce O'Brien. Thank you both so much for joining me. This was such a blast of an episode to record. And thank you, as always, to our producer, Red, for making the show happen. And thank you to everyone out there listening and watching. We hope you're safe. We hope you're well. And as always, beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues, and it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.